Hi, it's Brock Romanek, editor of thecorporatecouncil.net. I'm here today with Bill Morley. I'm very excited. Bill, at least for those of you that have been practicing longer than 10 years, remember Bill Fonley from being not only chief counsel, but he accumulated a number of other titles towards the end of his career. But for the bulk of his career, he was, I think, simply chief counsel, which at the time there was much fewer senior staff members in the Division of Corporation Finance, so that, you know, you were in the inner circle just by having that title. But I think by the time you ended, you had senior associate director as well. Bill, how did you wind up at the SEC?
I sort of aimed towards becoming a member of a staff member at the SEC. I was an economics major as an undergraduate, and then I first went to graduate school in business administration with a GW with a specialization in finance and securities. And so I was always looking. Then I decided, well, you know, what am I going to do? This was Vietnam War time, and what am I going to do at that point? And so I talked to my father, and I said, I'll go to law school. And so really, when I got out of law school, the place that I most wanted to work, I interviewed with several government agencies and some local law firms back in Wilmington, Delaware, where I was from. But the SEC was really the place I wanted to go. And I thought that this was sort of the culmination of what I had put together, being economics, finance, and then law. With specialization, I took securities law and then an advanced securities law course in law school. So I was always sort of headed in that direction.
And this, when you started, what do you remember? What year you started?
I started in 1969.
And what building was
that? I was in the 500 North Capitol Street building, and I came in like most people. I was a branch attorney. Back then, the process of applying was somewhat different than it was later on when I was really dealing with a lot of the hiring. At that point, you came in and you took a test. It was like a law school thing. They gave you a law school question on something in the securities law, and my question dealt with the definition of what is a security. And then they sent that off, and they had it all typed up, and then you went through sort of a board of review where you had an interview with representatives from all of the divisions. And then they would get together and decide. They would ask you questions, and we'd talk about it. And then those divisions that were interested in you would call you in for further interviews the same day in the afternoon, and you would go around and talk to people from the divisions where you were selected. And it was interesting. A name that many of you will remember, Mickey Beach, was the person who I interviewed with. She was at that point a branch chief in Corp Fin. And so that was the interview process, and that's how I ended up as a branch attorney in one of the processing branches in the Division of Corporation Finance, which is where I wanted to go. I mean, once again, it sort of fit together with the kinds of things that I had been doing. I had never had any great desire to be a litigator or an investigator other than the investigation that goes into the processing of a registration statement or processing of some kind of a disclosure statement.
So, I know you were heavily involved in the shareholder proposal process for many years. I know that we wrote a treatise together, an ill-fated treatise for Aspen, shortly after you retired. But how did you wind up dealing with shareholder proposals, and what's your memories of
well,
that
one,
process?
Well, one day I was sitting in my office as a branch attorney. At that point, probably I'd been about my third year at the commission, getting to be somewhat of a senior branch attorney. And I got a call to come down, myself and two other attorneys, to see Neil McCoy, who's at that time the chief counsel in Corp Fin. And he says, look, we've got a problem. We've got 100 letters that have to be written on shareholder proposals. And at that in those days, all of the branch attorneys did shareholder proposals. It was just another no action letter that came out of the chief counsel's office. People didn't specialize as we did at a later point and actually have a task force to do them. But all the attorneys did them, and it was this crisis. We've got this backlog of we've got to do all these shareholder proposals. And so we set to work with this special project of getting out all these letters. And that was sort of my first real deep delving into the shareholder proposal process. And within actually a couple of months after that, I was actually selected to become an attorney in the chief counsel's office. And Pete Romeo and I were two youngest attorneys in the chief counsel's office, and we were started doing the day-to-day process of shareholder proposals. And then came time for the, I guess it was the, trying to think, 72 amendments to the shareholder proposal rule, I think, probably. Maybe the 76, I'm now forgetting the actual time frame. But Pete and I, mostly Pete, did the drafting of the revised shareholder proposal rules, and they went into effect. Peter then got involved drafting the 16A and B rules, and so I ended up with the shareholder being the main shareholder proposal guy in the chief counsel's office. I often talk to Peter about that, and the fact that there were two specialties. There could be the 16B stuff, and there could be the shareholder proposal rule. Pete ended up rich. he did the 16B rules and it parlayed that into a very nice career. I took the 14A8, had a lot of fun doing it, but never became rich doing it.
I know you hired me my first time around at the SEC in 1988, and at that time you were paired with Bill Carter. How'd you wind up getting involved in the recruiting and hiring process for CorpFin?
Well, I think most of what I did in the recruiting area was once I became the chief counsel. We developed a process. Bill Carter was actually doing it before I was doing it. And Bill was the one who coordinated all the, and still even when I was doing a lot of it on myself, was still the coordinator. I was sort of a secondary reviewer. Bill was the one who went through all the resumes and picked out the people we were going to interview and set up all the interviews. And even when I was doing a lot of it, it was basically his thing that he did. And then we got to the point where, in order to save time, he would go and call through all the resumes and pick out people we were going to bring in, and then we developed the process of Bill and I doing a double on whoever came in. The two of us would sit and talk with whoever was being interviewed, and then we would send people out to have a further interview either with a branch chief or a senior branch attorney or something like that to get the processing angle of things that were going on. And then we would get together, we would evaluate our various sheets that we put together, well, they answered this question and how they answered this question, and make determinations. Occasionally, if there was someone who we said, well, geez, this is somebody we just got to have, even people who, particular people, we would send them up to somebody even more senior to interview if we were trying to impress them to bring them in. Most people didn't get that treatment, but most people we would go through and we'd make a judgment both on the it's a really funny thing. I sort of set up my whole law school and educational career with the idea of that was what I wanted to do. I wanted to have the financial background as well as the legal background. And clearly when we used to look at resumes and what have you, if you had something in your background that sort of stuck out, some kind of business experience, some kind of, if you were a business minor or business major or whatever, accounting or that kind of thing, that was the kind of thing that got you in the door to interview.
Yeah.
And we found, it was really kind of funny, we found that sometimes that worked and sometimes it didn't. Sometimes you would bring somebody in who didn't have any background, and they would wow you, and they came in and did a great job. Other times you'd look at somebody, oh, this person's really got a good background, and you'd hire them, and they didn't turn out to be good branch attorneys. And so it was, you know, just like any hiring process, I think our batting average was better than most, but sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't.
What are among your fondest memories of working on the staff?
I think it really changed as I went along. When I started in 1969, the division was about 300 people, counting everybody, all the staff, secretaries, and at that time we actually had secretaries who typed letters. this was back even before fax machines. They were actual letters written and typed and sent out or picked up. But everybody knew everybody. There was a real camaraderie. There was a real feeling. And, of course, a lot of it was that there were just far fewer companies. And so you didn't have the tremendous number of filings that came through as the number of public companies increased and the 64 amendments and the 34 Act stuff cut in. And so all kinds of more things were being filed. But it was mostly the people. It was the interaction, and part of that is why in the end I decided it was time for me to go after 30 years, because I liked the give and take. The more emails back and forth, and what I like to get up and go and talk to somebody and sit down to talk to them face to face. And I was just not cut out for the modern day email, voicemail, all that kind of stuff. I wanted to be able to look at somebody and talk to them face to face. And so I think that when it reached the point that it was getting well past any of the ability to do that, it was time for me to go. But it was the interpersonal stuff and the real camaraderie and the small size of the us against them, and a lot of smart people wanting to do really good work. And those are the kinds of things that I really remember.
Yeah, I mean, now when I go back and visit, it's even a bit stranger from back from the era you're talking about, because so many people are telecommuting or on altered work schedules.
Right. They're not even there.
Right. The phones aren't even ringing because they're ringing somewhere else.
And it's funny. I've been back to the new building. Whatever the address is, I don't even know anymore. But by Union Station, and I would go back, and it felt just the structure of the way the halls were. There didn't seem to be anywhere near the interaction, and it was people in little boxes, and it was kind of depressing.
Yeah.
And so as the size got more, just things are a lot different. I mean, the whole industry is much different, and I was in it at a very early age and really enjoyed it. And as it got bigger and bigger, it just got less personal and more just a job, is the way it seems to me.
I feel like my greatest contribution to the staff was when you retired and Bill Carter retired, that the things you guys were throwing out, that I went through your garbage and took the boxes away in the chief counsel's library, but I'm not sure if all that stuff made it over to the new building.
Well, I'll tell you, I often thought that at the time I left, that I had probably signed more letters or things had gone under with a stamp signature of mine than any, because the long number of years that before people signed their own no action letters and all the shareholder proposal letters that I wrote and signed, that my signature must have been out there more than anybody else's at some point along the way.
Yeah. So what are you up to nowadays?
Not much, except having a good time and being fully retired. It's funny. You talked about our work on that 14A8 book. That was sort of the last professional work that I did.
Oh.
Since that time, I've now been gone. God, it's going on. It was 69 when I retired, so it's going on 12 years this summer, or maybe 11 years this summer. And I haven't really done any. I like to keep up with some of my old colleagues. You mentioned Bill Carter. He's the one I talk to more than anybody else, because he fits right into one of the couple of things that I do now during the during the summer, starting in the beginning of May and into the end of September. I spend lots of my time at the University of Maryland outdoor swimming pool, doing my exercising, getting laps in. I am a tremendous Maryland fan. I go to, and I'm just not a football and a basketball fan, I go to women's soccer, men's soccer, women's field hockey, women's lacrosse. So I'm an all-around Maryland fan, spent a lot of time out there. And Bill and I are, Bill was a Hopkins graduate and a big lacrosse fan because of that. And so every spring we correspond back and forth quite frequently over our teams playing lacrosse. And this is, of course, a very you just mentioned as we got on that we're now going off to the Final Four in lacrosse, which has been a few years since Maryland's done that. So that's my big activity. And the other thing I do is travel. I travel. I go to Europe at least once a year. I get up to New York two or three times a year to go to the theater, which is another big interest. And so I'm just having a good time and living a life of luxury.
Well, that sounds good.
or whatever luxury my government retirement will allow me to live.
Well, I appreciate your time, Bill. It's always great to talk to you, and I'm sure a lot of people out there will be glad to hear your voice and hear how happy you do sound.
Well, it's a real pleasure. Thank you.